This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of February 16th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night, not too late, is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I've stopped shaking.
Like a leaf? Or no, we had a big earthquake. I guess big earthquake is
it's well, all... I wasn't shaking, but Tokyo was.
Yeah, it's all relative, but it was one of the bigger earthquakes we have had since 2011, I would say, here in Tokyo. But we're all good here.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of those California earthquakes, as I mentioned to you before we started recording. I was like, yeah, you could hear it coming. You could feel it coming. It rolled in and it went away as slowly as it came. It just seemed to last for a long time and then roll kind of away.
Yeah, it was... That it had that about a 2 minute sort of imperceptible little, and I see things are still vibrating a little bit here. So.
Yeah. I told my wife, they're going to be aftershocks. Don't come running in here. We're recording the show. Grab
because,
a pillow.
Because we don't want any other aftershocks.
Yeah.
How?
But yeah. We have not had one of these big earthquakes for almost 10 years. Almost 10 years exactly.
That was definitely, I mean, I was telling John, I felt a number of them here, but they tend to be short and sharp. And, you know, one jolt and it's, oh, hey, wait, that was an earthquake. Okay, this was these ones like, I'm an earthquake, damn it.
Yeah.
Pay attention to me.
Yeah, I have rarely gotten up out of a chair or bed or anything for any kind of earthquake because we're from California and we know what real earthquakes are. And most of the ones out here are just like somebody nudging your car. But this one made me stand up.
So well, yeah, this one was like someone nudging your car into your house.
Okay, don't exaggerate. We were not near the epicenter, so don't exaggerate, but it wasn't that bad. All right, people, COVID numbers are going down in Tokyo, so that's good, but we still have to fight to stamp this thing out. So let's try to get back to as close to normal as we can, normal life or normalcy.
Normal life, and I did hear this past week research saying that double masking is effective, so if you want to go there, I tried that today. I'd heard people doing it, but I tried it today, and it wasn't unduly uncomfortable, so I might go that way.
All right, yeah, we'll see. I think it probably is a good idea on some of the crowded trains because they make me nervous. I usually just get off and take the next train, but sometimes that's not feasible. So, and then one other thing, I know we don't ever ask for this, but if you have a moment, please go to iTunes and rate and review us so we can gain some more respect in the podcast world. We know you guys are listening and it's nice to have that, but if we get the ratings and the reviews and that helps us out. So please do that. If you can do that on iTunes, we'd appreciate it.
Please.
All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former NPB slugger Boomer Wells. We're going to discuss camps and hit some other topics. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay. Well, on Saturday, this Saturday past, a week ago, I had a fairly, well, I don't know how to put this into a few words because there were many, but it was a captivating, entertaining chat with Boomer Wells, and I captured some of that for the podcast. And so I hope you enjoy that. Greg Boomer Wells came up through the Toronto Blue Jays organization. He was not drafted. He was a college guy who went to a tryout, and the Blue Jays signed him out of a tryout. He worked his way up to the majors, but eventually they moved him to the Minnesota Twins, where the infamous Calvin Griffith sold him to the Hankyu Braves.
Yes.
As Marty Kienert said in our roundtable discussion about a year ago almost, we... that Boomer didn't want to come to Japan, and he talked about that. And he had a, you know, he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder when he came, and he was absolutely determined. I mean, he had the mindset when he turned pro, because he was the guy who the Blue Jays paid nothing to sign.
Mm.
He wasn't a draft choice. He was no bonus. And he watched his career. You know, he kept watching people who were not doing as well as him in the minors get promoted ahead of him over and over and over again. And it just kind of stuck with him. And so when he got a chance to come play in Japan, you know, he was going to show him, and he show him he did.
Hmm.
So he's kind of a old timey baseball storytelling jukebox. And I just love the heck out of Boomer Wells, because you just, you know, you push the button and he tells you a story. This is amazing. So we're going to listen to him mostly about spring training. So hit it, Boomer.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, all the way from Georgia, USA, is the one and only, the original Boomer Wells. Thank you for joining us.
How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're good, man. And you know, even better, you're on the show. It's always been too long. And how are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent.
Doing fine. Staying home, staying safe.
Good, good. More power to you. Now, we got spring training, as always, February 1st in Japan. We've already had, we're already well into spring training. And I got a couple of questions about, you know, what was your experience with spring training in Japan? What was your introduction to that?
My introduction... They told us that we were going to spring training. I asked, how's the weather? You know, how cold, how what be. They told them, well, we're going to Kochi, and it's like being in Florida. Okay. All right. So when I came over, my wife and I came over, we stepped off the plane in Kochi.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have anything but short.
Oh my!
Jackets.
Oh my!
Yes, I had a short leather jacket, and she had a short leather jacket.
Oh my!
And we got to Kochi, and I was like, "Holy hell! This is not Florida weather. It snowed most of the time. It was cold." And you know, you get out on the field. I wasn't used to, you know, I always loved running, but I wasn't used to all that practice.
Mm-hmm.
We get out there and we would practice and diving and sliding and hitting and running and stretching. And I mean, get on the field at what, 9 o'clock, get off the field at 4, and never stop moving. But for lunch, about 30 minutes worth of lunch, you know, and I would get back to the room. I never forget the first time I came back to the room. I mean, I was covered in dirt from head to toe, was so tired. I mean, was beat up.
Mm.
I walked in the hotel room. My wife go, where we going? Where we going tonight?
Sorry.
And I'm dragging, coming in the door dragging. She, where we going tonight? Like that. I tell you what I'm gonna do. I say, I'm gonna lay down here behind this door on the floor for an hour and go to sleep for an hour. I go, then I'm gonna get up, take my clothes off, put them in the bag, put them outside the door, take my uniform off, put them in the bag, put them outside the door. Then I'm gonna go take a shower. Then I'm gonna lay in the bed and probably sleep for an hour. I go, then I'm gonna get up, go eat dinner, come back to the room and go to bed. Now, I don't know where you gonna go. you ain't no fun. I go, believe me, if every day be like this, you right, I'm not gonna be any fun.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, so when the off day came, believe me, I like, when off day came, I'd take her to the movies or something like that.
Mm.
But I enjoyed my off day was like gold. Like, I enjoyed my off day. I was like, oh my goodness. It was, oh. Then one day, we weren't still in coaching.
Okay.
We were still, we went back to Nishinomiya.
Okay.
And we were going, supposed to be practicing. This snowed, I mean snowed hard. So, you know, we get dressed and stuff and go to the practice field.
Mm-hmm.
Field covered in snow. Like, yeah, we ain't going to practice today. We got a day off. Shoot, they got to rake that snow to the side. We took infield. Like, oh my goodness. Nothing stops practice. Something
no.
will stop the game.
No.
But nothing stops practice.
Oh, so right. So right. Indeed. Indeed. Now, I want to ask, what did you like, or I should say John wants to know, what did you like most about spring training? I think I already know the answer.
Most about spring training?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Oh.
I mean, I had fun.
Okay.
I mean, I had fun regardless because, you know, I used to tease everybody.
Right.
And I'd laugh and talk and stuff. And the guys, you know, I'd be running in the back when we'd be running.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be back there talking and laughing and teasing everybody. And the guys used to tell me, no. No laughing. The ball's going to get, you know, Count the Coup is going to get mad. You know, no laughing. This is no laughing on the job. I go, this is not a job. This is a game. Have fun. So I'd always be laughing and joking and stuff. And they'd always tell me that waiter son was going to get upset. And waiter never said a word. And it was funny that he never said anything. And later I came to find out that he enjoyed me talking and laughing and messing with people, so the team just got looser and looser and looser.
Mm.
And you know, everybody started laughing and having fun, and we played good ball.
Mm.
And it was, you know, but your question was about what did I like about spring training?
Yeah, or what did you like the most about spring training?
The most about spring training was that I could take as much batting practice as I wanted.
Okay.
I always love hitting. So, hey, if I had somebody to throw, I swung.
Okay.
So that was the thing. The best thing was taking as much batting practice as you wanted to.
Okay. Now, one of
that I had no problem with.
Okay. One of the things that I remember Marty Brown told me when he was with Hiroshima. In, I think, 1991 or 90, no, hold on, it was 93. So the manager would take the rookies. Every rookie who made a mistake in practice would take them out to right field, the right field foul pole, and hit balls at them. You know, until they were all bruised up. So did they have any sort of rookie, any maybe it wasn't that kind of... you know, Marine kind of boot camp training, but did they have a sort of a special routine for any of the rookies in any of the camps you were at?
No.
Okay.
No special routine. The rookies just, young guys just catered to the older players.
Okay.
But other than that,
well,
there was no hazing or nothing like that. Mm. You know, they always would be at the front of the line doing the running and stuff. The young guy would always be the first to run, the first to do this, the first to do that.
Okay.
So they were the gung-ho guys. And the older guys tend to be toward the back so they could pace themselves, so to speak.
Back with the imported guys. I see that. I still see that at the ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You learn fast not to be up at the front of the line.
Yeah, the back. I've noticed that, you know, when the teams are warming up and they're going through their little, you know, 30-yard stretch there, and the front guys are the guys who are doing the shouting. There's a continuum. Yeah. The guys at the front are doing most of the shouting. The guys at the back are doing most of the laughing.
Yeah. That's the way it is. The young guys are the gung-ho guys.
Okay. Now, when you... you already answered the first one about Hankyu having their Kochi camp. Yeah, Kochi does. I'll agree. Kochi is like Florida, but that's in July.
Thank you.
Not in February.
In February, it's more like let me see. What's cold but not too cold?
Maybe Virginia or.
Yeah.
Maryland.
Maryland, yeah. North Carolina line.
Okay. Toward,
you know, northern North Carolina line. You know, something like that. It can get cold.
Yeah, and rainy and wet and you name it. And I heard, the Lions trained there until very recently. And, you know, they'd train
really?
In muddy fields. I think, yeah, even... The Lions guys told me that when Hiroyuki Nakajima, who was their shortstop for the most of the 90s, was a kid, basically the manager wrote him off because they had him playing third base that he wasn't used to, and he was taking balls. He was missing balls on this muddy, bumpy field in Kochi in the rain. And he wrote him off as he couldn't play. And this is a guy who became a Golden Glove. He didn't want him because he made mistakes in the mud.
They'd rake the field in between, you know, like certain innings and stuff. But what I couldn't get them to realize is that, you know, they don't have to, you don't have to rake over around first, because in between at bats or whatever, I got big feet and I would always rake around because I know what it would. I grew up playing on dirt.
Okay.
When they had the all dirt field.
Uh huh.
So I knew how to use my feet to smooth out the cleat marks and the holes. And all of that, so I did that automatically. But the Japanese guy would never smooth out the ground around them with their cleats and stuff. So they'd wait for them to drag it in between the fifth inning or whatever. When they drug it, came out there and raked it off with the rakes. But to me, that all that did was sort of put a thin layer of dirt over the hole so you didn't see them. So basically, that was even worse. At least I knew where the holes were before they raked them, but when they raked it, that thin layer of dirt, and it looked like it was supposed to be smooth, but it got a hole up under the dirt. And that's when the ball would take a bad hop. So I always use my feet all through the game to keep my area smooth.
What size shoes do you wear?
When I played in Japan, I wore a 13.
Okay.
Now, for some reason, they grew and I wear 15.
Okay. I hear you. I came to Japan as a 12 and now I'm a 13. I think as you get older, they get flatter, or at least that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I don't know what it is. And they definitely grow. I guess your feet keep growing or whatever. I don't know.
I don't know neither. Okay, now, do you have a favorite story from spring training? It's sort of like one that, you know, I don't know. It's just like can't get out of your head.
A favorite story from spring training?
Yeah.
I remember... Only story that I have really from spring training that is a cautionary story.
Okay.
I learned from it. I learned from it. It definitely taught me something. When I first came to Japan, my first year, I came over. I was sold to Japan against my will. Mm-hmm. And since they forced me to go to Japan, I wanted to show everybody I could hit. Well, I went over with Bump Wills. So Bump was the major league guy.
Sure.
The big sign, because he signed a 4-year contract and stuff. And I was the guy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to prove that I could play, that I could hit. So I went, when I came to spring training, I was ready. I was probably seasoned, ready to go seasoned right then, as far as, because in the States, you only get like, 2 weeks, 3 weeks worth of spring training?
Right.
And you start, you're ready to go. I didn't know it was 2 months worth of spring training in Japan. So, you know, I went there gung-ho. So when the season started and when the spring training game started, we played against Cebu.
Okay.
And Kudo was pitching.
Okay.
He was a young guy. I was a young guy. I hit 2 home runs off of Kudo, 1 over the scoreboard. And they said that the manager of Cebu at that time said he just about ran Kudo to death. Mm-hmm. Because he had let me hit 2 home runs off him. And it's funny because from that situation, we became good friends out of all the time. Even now when I go back to Japan and say we'll be playing, well, I guess Oryx. Let's just say Oryx.
Okay.
Because I can't get used to saying Kintetsu.
Okay.
I just can't do it. Okay. Or the Buffalo. I can't get used to saying the Buffalo.
Okay.
Because to me, if you buy a team, then the team takes on your name. You don't take on their name. But anyway.
Anyway.
Even now, if I be in Osaka at the game and stuff, and they be playing Sable, he'll come across and we'll start talking and stuff and laughing and stuff. And we were friends from that day forward, basically. Mm. But the story that I was getting to is that I was ready to play in the season right there. So I hit all these home runs, a bunch of home runs in spring training.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. And just like anything else, if you peak too soon, it's just like going up the mountain. Once you get to the peak of the mountain, it ain't nowhere to go but down after that. Mm. So when the season started, I started off in sort of like a slump.
Okay.
And I had to struggle. I had to struggle the second half of the season. I don't know what I hit, but I got my average over 300. And, you know, and what it was, you know, then they told me, well, you had a good season. No, it's not a good season for me. I'm better hitter than that. No, you had a good season. Okay, we'll see. I'm glad y'all think that's a good season. You just wait. So,
yeah,
you know, it was just getting to know what you need to do. That first season is like a learning process.
Uh-huh.
You've got to learn that spring training. You got to know, okay, I don't need all of these. I can take BP all day long, but I don't need all of these game at-bats. All I need is one here, one there, you know, and then the last 2 games, I played a whole game, and, you know, you're ready to go. But that's the only real story that spring training was basically boring, so to speak. I mean, you there, believe me, it was work. Spring training was just work. To me, you made your money in spring training.
I get you.
Because that was work.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you for joining us and look forward to having you on again before so long an interval.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Wells. Right now he's living in Cartersville, Georgia, so that was a treat, and hopefully we'll get to see you before too long.
Hopefully. And not just see you, but, no mask. We actually see your face.
Yeah, I ran into him. I'll just recall briefly before I move on. I ran into him when I was at the winter meetings 5 years ago, my second winter meetings in Nashville, Tennessee. And I didn't have – I'm just leaving the grounds, and I see Boomer and Matt Winters.
What a combo.
I know. I think Kateri Whitfield was there too, who didn't overlap with either of those two. He was there a little before, but I knew him from growing up as a San Francisco Giants fan. And the three of them were talking about, the old days. And I thought, I'm just going to say hi and I'm going to leave. And I never bothered to pull out an IC recorder or an iPhone and record them.
Uh-huh.
And that was I heard one of Boomer's, one of his, he's probably got 300 or 400 really, really good stories. And I heard one of them about practice. And I don't have it on tape. I don't have it. I've told people, but I can't do it justice. So this time we did record Boomer and we got to hear some stories. And so what was your take on his, I don't know what, fond recollections of Japanese spring training?
Well, I was so glad when we had him on the show the first time that I even looked it up. It was January 29th, 2013, volume three, show number two, for those of you who want to go to the website and listen to that show. And that interview was really good, but this one was even better.
Wow.
And as we were talking about before we began recording, I have to reference this again. He reminds me of an uncle or cousins, because all my family's from the South, from Louisiana. And the way he tells stories and the way he reacts to things, it just reminded me of family. So it was really fun to hear him. But this has to be your best interview in the history of JBW, and not in the quality of the questions or anything and the answers, because Boomer is really a wealth of entertainment and his wonderful stories and he really has artful presentation and that's fun. But you actually showed restraint. I could hear you wanting to interrupt or wanting to direct the conversation, but actually biting your tongue a little bit and letting him finish. So I thought that was really good. And certainly he's not as loquacious maybe as Warren Cromartie, but he's such a compelling subject. It was just awesome to hear these stories. So, geez, I want to touch on some things, but then focus on a couple.
Okay.
I love the story of him arriving in the cold weather, which I'm sure you knew was something I was going to pick up on, because I can identify with that. I'd have a jacket on the plane, though, maybe in a couple blankets, anyway, but I wouldn't get caught without a jacket. So I love that they got off the plane and they were already cold. And then I also enjoyed the fact that, geez, I can't imagine an old-time rival merging with my former team, and he couldn't even bring himself really to say the names. And I thought that's very telling. It just talks to me about how deep those rivalries were when those guys were playing against each other, and it's so difficult. And we say Oryx Buffaloes now that it doesn't mean much, it's so natural, but it was such a rivalry back then.
Yeah, they were. I mean, at that, when he arrived, there were three teams playing in the Osaka area: the Nankai Hawks and the Kintetsu Buffaloes, and three railroad teams, and the Hankyu Braves. And he talks about Nishinomiya, and I never saw a game at Nishinomiya, but I did go past the stadium a couple of times. When my ma was here visiting, and she was staying down in Kobe and Osaka, and going between Kobe and Osaka, we would, on the Hankyu line, you'd
go past this huge monolith of Nishinomiya Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And but I never saw a game there except on TV. And yeah, just amazing. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. That whole thing, but yeah, Oryx, Buffaloes. Let's just call him Oryx.
Yeah, he couldn't even say it. So I thought that was interesting. But what I wanted to focus on first was, I guess, the fact that he said nothing stops practice. And I thought,
I know you must have laughed when you heard that because I did.
And I'll tell you this story because I remember the first time, as you know, I covered the Dragons before I moved to the big boys up here in Tokyo when I was living in Nagoya, and just specifically the Dragons. So I wanted to talk to one of the players. I don't know if it was Alonzo Powell, probably it was, or Leo Gomez at the time. And I went to the stadium, and I think this was probably 96, I think it was, 1996. And it was raining, and I figured, oh, cool. It's raining, so they won't practice. And they'll get there and they'll all check in and then they'll be coming out soon because it's raining. They can't play. So I'm waiting around. This was, I mean, we had a little paper. We weren't part of the press club. We could not get into the stadium. I had to wait for the guys to come out. And as they're, I don't know if you ever went to cover a game at Nagoya Stadium, you know,
not a game.
Not a game. Okay.
Well, for practice, I covered a Japan national team practice there a couple of years ago.
Not even like that. Well, for practice, some of the guys, they would drive in and all the fans could wait and watch them drive in. And then it's sort of like what goes on at what do they call it? Zozo Marine Field or Stadium now, where you could see the guys go in and then you could see them walking toward the building and the facility and go in. Well, there was an area like that in front of Nagoya Stadium. So you could see them walking in. And if you were press, which I was sort of press, I could get past one line of security people and I could stand there and wait and talk to some of the guys. So I was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And I'm like, well, it's raining. They cannot be practicing. And finally, one of the PR guys walks by. I stopped him and I said, hey, where are the guys? You know, I know they're not practicing. Where are they? And he said, oh, there's an indoor facility that they're practicing. It's an indoor facility. Where is that? And he said, well, you can't go there, but it's around the way here. And then he showed me the building. And I thought, oh, this is awful. This is terrible. It's raining. Let these poor guys go home. And I thought, you know, I always thought when there were rain out days and when they showed up to the stadium, it was raining cats and dogs, that they would just check in and then go home. No, 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 no. Those guys get there to the stadium and they don't have a game. They have to go to that indoor facility and practice.
Mm.
And so when Boomer said nothing stops practice, I thought, oh, don't I know it? Because I was stood out there. It was at least 2 hours I was out there waiting for guys and had no idea that this, I had just started covering the Dragons. Had no idea that this sort of thing went on, and I was shocked. The other thing was about Boomer talking about raking the area around first base with his feet, and he says he has big feet, and he does. If he's wearing a 15 now, that's pretty big. But I just thought, you know, that kind of was a new one because I thought and assumed that all players around first base did that. But I think Boomer gave us some insight on the quality of the fields that they played on it sometimes. Right. And in fact, Bobby Rose, remember Bobby Rose with the Bay Stars? He told me one time when I interviewed him, he was upset at playing at some of these regional parks. He said, and he called them cow pastures as well.
Mm.
And that was his phrasing. And he said that they had all these expensive players, high paid players running around risking injury on these cow pastures. And he didn't get it. And you hear Boomer talk about holes and how whenever they raked it, it just covered the holes so you couldn't see them. I thought, you know, these fields, the things that they put these guys through in the good old days, it just wasn't fair. But this was such an engaging, such a fun interview. Every minute of it, you know, I listened to it twice right away just when you sent it to me because it was so fun. And I couldn't wait for the listeners to hear that, and I hope they all enjoyed it.
It was
before, you know, instead of just going into just sort of love for the whole experience. I think the interesting thing is the contrasts. Okay, what do you love about spring training and what do you hate about spring? Well, one is, you know, the purse is you can get as much BP as you like. You know, if I can get somebody's throat of me, I can swing. And that was interesting. But the other one is it was work. Sort of like, so it was like that's where you worked and the swinging was good, but like, you know, when he says practice on off days, you're not kidding. I mean, practice on off days is about, you know, off days are about practice. And that one comment, as you said, nothing stops practice. I mean, the guys would pray for rain that would stop the game and then they would practice. And I've heard this because practice, as much trouble as it is, and I don't want to, you know, go into pseudo-psychology, but it's an internal thing. You know, it's not a public, you know, it keeps you out of that public eye, keeps you out of that sort of like criticism for doing stuff wrong in public. You know, the public shaming aspect of Japanese baseball. So it spares them that. And it's almost like, I get a feeling we sometimes get the sense from talking to players that the Japanese guys would prefer much more practice and fewer games.
Yeah. Yes.
No, it's like, I don't quite understand that. And I don't think it's all the Japanese, but I think there's some who sort of like, you know, practices where they shine and they get into the game maybe because they don't play. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that'd be something to ask them as we go through this season if we get an opportunity.
I'm curious about that. I'm sure the Stars is different, but yeah, certainly. I mean, I learned a lot from talking to Boomer, and I saw some things that he mentioned that I understood. I kind of understood. I'd seen them a long times, and it gave a description to some of the things I'd seen before, like the continuum about where, when guys are practicing, when the team's before the game, the teams run around and, you know, they warm up. Now they just warm up in front of the dugout. Okay. Or I know some teams that'll warm up in left field, kind of MLB style. That's kind of new. But used to be, the teams would, if you go to a high school game in Japan, if you go to a high school tournament, and I had never been to one until a couple of years ago when Kotaro Kiyomiya was playing at Waseda Jitsugyo High School. I went out to middle of nowhere Tokyo to watch him play. And it looked like that the players would run in formation around the field. They didn't have BP and, you know, it wasn't set up like a pro game. You know, they just had to warm up running around the field and they were chanting, you know, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, running in formation. And that's what they used to do in at the pro level. I was stunned the first time I went to a NPB early practice before the gates were open in 1995 at Seibu Stadium. And I saw the Lotte Marines looking like the U.S. Marines. 1-2, 1-2, running around the outfield. And Boomer told me that, yeah, the old guys gravitate towards the back, as you and I have seen in the practice. The old guys and the imported players tend to be at the back of the line. And the guys up front are expected to do all the shouting and hustling. And the guy in the back are supposed to be doing the laughing and talking.
And cruising, yeah. Yeah, now that you mentioned that, now that's what I see. Yeah, yes. Yeah, I didn't really notice it before.
Yeah, I'd noticed it, but I never, like I said, you notice it, but you don't really see it. So that was interesting, and the bit about you know, practicing too much, trying too hard at the beginning. I think a lot of people learn that. And I think the other thing I learned from Boomer's chat was, and he talked about two big lessons in his career. And one of them was the first one, which is was the end of the podcast, which is the end of the interview, when he said, it takes you 1 year to learn, you know, how to pace yourself in Japan.
Mm, yeah.
And I think that's not true for everybody. I think some people get it right the first time. But some I know players who have wiped themselves out in their first spring training.
Right. Yeah. And we've been hearing that, I think the past, I don't know, in the podcast years here, early on, we heard a lot of guys saying, well, you know, I'm trying not to wear myself out in spring and in the spring, the exhibition season and all that stuff.
Well, they give I'm sorry.
No. I think we've heard that a lot. Yeah, doing these interviews. Yeah.
And the other thing which was happened in another part of the discussion, which isn't in the interview, was he said he learned enough. The other lesson he learned came 1 year too late. And I think it was 1992. He played his last season in Japan with the Fukuoka Daiei Hawks. And Koichi Tabuchi was the manager. Mm-hmm. This is when they were still playing at Heiwadai Stadium in a park in Fukuoka. And he said, you know, I had an outstanding first half of the season, but I ran out of gas. And the second half was a nightmare. And he said sometime through the second half of the season, he was talking to Hiromitsu Karuta, who was the first guy to get into the Hall of Fame after a career primarily as a designated hitter. Mm-hmm. And Koichi Tabuchi, who was elected to the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. And he was saying to these two older guys, he said, oh man, I realized today that all this sweating and straining and doing all this stuff and practice and not, you know, pushing myself like I've been doing for, you know, for 7 years, my body can't take it anymore. And he said, that's right. It takes every one of us. We go through that. You know, it takes us 1 year to learn, and next year you'll be okay. And Katya said, you know, it's every player goes through it at the point of, okay, your body isn't the body you had 7 years ago. And the problem was the Hawks got a new manager, Yuki Nemoto, and Boomer did not have his typically good season. So he was, became a former Hawk, and his career was over before he had a chance to put his knowledge into practice.
Yeah, learning that. But, everybody is different, and that's one of the things I always try to stress, that each guy, each case is different, and the reactions are different and all those things. So, I like how Boomer talked about the fact that he was trying to get ready so that he'd be ready to play in March, but he didn't realize, I guess that first season, he didn't realize it was 2 months, you know, it's probably a little bit shorter than 2 months from February 1st to whenever late March when they start. But yeah, that's basically for all intents and purposes, 2 months. And that, you know, peaking too early is a problem. And I just find it so perplexing that these guys can get tired and the managers can know that they're tired, but they keep running them out there instead of giving them some rest. And sometimes it's disappointing as a fan when your favorite team, some of the top players are resting. Mm-hmm. But I know they need it. You know, I know it's part, especially guys who are whatever age they are or whatever situation they're in. The thing is, we also don't know what kinds of bumps and bruises they get along the way that are just nagging away at them, that if they just took some time off. And me, I got another sore hamstring, so I know what I'm talking about here, people. You just need some time off from not being active to just recover that way.
Right.
And so, sometimes your body just needs some time off. So I don't know why they don't get it. They should be able to get a day off or a couple games off. Plus, you work it around that Monday off day and get your guys some rest. So well, the, um, it was Yeah, go ahead.
One of the Japanese managers who I used to love to pester with questions about why do you do this in Japan? I don't know why they're all Pacific League managers, but Haruki Ihara, the former Lions manager, and Norifumi Nishimura, the former Oryx and Lotte manager, and my favorite was Masataka Nashida, former Kintetsu Buffaloes and Rakuten Eagles and Nippon Ham Fighters manager. And Nashida was great because my Japanese was really lousy, but he was really patient and kind, and it was always took time to explain. All these guys would take time to explain things to me, and I really appreciate that because I could be a real pest. And anyway, I was friends with Tuffy Rhodes, and I knew Tuffy had a bad heel, and it hurt him to play. He could hit, he could run, but he couldn't run without pain. I think it was a toe maybe, or it was a heel. I don't remember. But he said, I need like a couple of, I need 10 days to rest, to keep it from being sore every day.
Right.
And he said, but I don't get a day off. And Norihiro Nakamura, his teammate his good friend, was also had a slight injury, a hand injury, I think, and he had to play. And I asked Nashida, wouldn't it be better just to give him a day off, give him a few days off here and there to let him rest up? And he said, I can't because if I were to do that, I think they were not having, this might have been in 2002, the year after they won the Pacific League.
Sure.
He said, because I give him a day off, it's a message to the fans that we've given up on the season.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that story before. Yeah,
so I'm going, so that's one of the things that, that got me. And there's this pressure, I don't want to say it pressure from the media, but the expectations of conforming to certain norms it's not like Japan is the only baseball country where teams are expected to conform to the norms, but one of them in Japan is, you don't give the best players rest. I thought that's changing, but that's one of the norms in Japan.
Yep. Well, this was fun, and hopefully Greg will come on again. It won't be so long. You said the interval, so I had to look it up because I'm like, it seemed like it was not that long ago, but it was kind of long ago.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, so 2013.
The way my memories go in 2013 seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
Except I don't remember who I was talking to.
good one. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about highlights from camp. Now, what have you seen? I've seen a few things out there, but what has caught your eye so far?
Gee, a number of things.
Let's play some tennis here. You give me one of yours, I'll give you one of mine. I'll return it.
Let me see here. I guess I'll go with Roki Sasaki because I'll steal one of yours.
And
his bullpens, and I didn't notice this early on, but he was prohibited from throwing anything but fastballs for his first three bullpens.
Mm-hmm.
And so they finally, took off the breaking ball breaks. Thank you. That's almost a laugh. And
stop it, Jimmy Allen.
No, that was the I know you're trying to tell a joke laugh. And that's the actual laugh. Okay, so we can hear the difference.
Yeah.
I wanted to compare and contrast there. So that was one of the things that caught my eye, and the reporting on him is pretty thorough. No word when he's actually going to play in a game. But he was happy. He said after his fourth bullpen that he was very happy with his fork ball, which he said gave him a lot of trouble last year. And I guess that means he worked on it a lot and didn't get results, but he appeared to get results in his first bullpen throwing it this year.
That's good. All right. My first note or highlight is that Yoshihisa Hirano has returned to Oryx, and he had his press conference this past week, I think it was, and he looks slimmer than he did in his days with the Buffaloes. So I thought that was good. And I think he'll probably have some new tricks up his sleeve for hitters here in Japan. And I know the Buffaloes can use the shot in the arm. And yeah, I think actually I wrote it down as shot in the arms.
Okay.
Because and that's not a COVID vaccine joke. But, you know, I looked it up. The Buffaloes had 20 saves last year. 20. And that was the fewest in Japan. But Hiroshima and Yakult only had one more each. They had 21. Respectively. So the Buffaloes definitely, I don't know, I don't think they got to a lot of save situations. So I don't think it was that they were blowing saves, but they blew their share of, I mean, they had their share of bullpen blowups as well. But I remember Hirano as a high traffic pitcher before, and I don't expect too much to change now. But I think, like I said, he'll have some tricks up his sleeve and it'll be fun to watch.
I never talked to Hirano before he went to the majors. I don't think I ever talked. I might have had a couple of words with him. I certainly had words about him when Terry Collins was the manager. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I don't think I talked to him either. I think I was in a media scrum when he was giving some
interviews. Yeah, but I had two interviews with him since he moved to the States. So I found him to be really charming and a smart guy. And he has this really nonchalant look when he's on the field, almost like, oh, yeah, you hit that ball? Yeah, well, okay. I don't know. It's kind of a goofy look on his expression, but he has this sort of patented little goofy expression he wheels out, I think, as if to show it's sort of part of his persona. And I think it's manufactured. I don't think it's real, because when you talk to him, you find him to be very astute and intelligent. So I always love that when it's funny how ball players pick up these sort of looks and images. A lot of players, and I've told this before about Kimi Asakuto when he was a player, he had this stare. To keep a lot of ball players pick up this stare to keep idle dilettantes away from bothering them when they're resting.
Yeah. I think, yeah, Hirano and Tatsushi Masuda of the Cebu Lions, I think they kind of have a similar demeanor on the mound.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so players, what they look like and what they are so often completely different.
True.
So there was that. Okay. Let me just think what other camp I find, you know, this guy played. And I mean, there was a lot of talk about the guy in the Giants camp who's 2 meters tall. Akihiro.
Akihiro Yuto. I guess it's either Masahito or Yuto.
The 2 meter high. Fifth round draft choice.
I mean, he's pretty deep. Maybe it's a fifth round. Yeah.
Okay. Low draft.
I went to the MPB site, and they still haven't updated the roster.
No. You are such an optimist. I love it.
guys.
They used to update it like the day before opening day. They've gotten better.
What's going on?
Anyway, yeah, so there's been a lot of talk about him because he's 2 meters tall. And I guess the other.
And he's hitting.
And is he?
Yeah, he's hitting. He had 3 hits the other day. I mean, obviously these are practice games or whatever they are, inter squad, but they moved him up from the working with the second team to the first team because he had been hitting so much. So.
Speaking of guys who haven't been hitting so much today, Akira Neo had 3 hits, and that was sort of like news because I don't know if he's ever had 3 hits as a professional.
I think he has.
He had two home runs in one game, I think, once.
And I think he had a hit in that game as well, I think.
Okay, but he's this mystery to me because he's not a big – I don't know what he doesn't look like a big physically strong guy, but he was so touted as a high school prodigy. But where I haven't watched him play, I've seen a couple of good swings, but I just don't see the buzz about him when I watch him play.
So I'm actually with you, but yeah, I saw the 3 hits that he had today. Mm-hmm. They just popped up on, I guess. algorithms on YouTube just give you stuff. And yeah, by the way, it's Yuto Akihiro.
Oh, thank you.
And I saw the three hits, and one of them was a ball kind of right down the middle that he really should have clubbed. I think he hit off the end of the bat, so it fell in front of the center fielder. The other one was a double to left field the opposite way that he smacked fairly well. And then I think he had a base hit up the middle. I think it was a base hit up the middle. They showed so many. I'm pretty sure it was. But it was a crop of young players. They were showing their hits today. Mm-hmm. And so he was mixed in. But, so they were better hits than I think he was having last spring, let's say.
Okay. And, he was hurt last spring too, I think. So he's been hurt both of his first two springs. And, thinking back, I keep trying to catch glimpses of him without resorting to YouTube. And I did see on the first team last year when he had his horrible stretch and he couldn't buy a hit. I did see a game, watch a Dragons game towards the end. I'm probably, Udiono was probably pitching because I was pretty locked in on him, and he had two really good swings, and I thought, wow, that is a swing. This guy does have a swing. It just hasn't been producing results, and maybe it's not a repeatable swing. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, remember, I think I comped his swing to a guy who is now with the Dragons. You remember that last year?
You comped it as in what, you got him extra chips at the casino?
R.
I don't know who you're referring to.
I compared his swing to Kosuke Fukudome's swing.
Wow, that's interesting. A big, powerful guy and a smaller-looking, less powerful-looking guy.
He's not that big. I'm just talking about the swings, though.
Okay.
Fukudome's not that big, though.
He's...
I'm sure Nao is small, but I don't know how big.
Fukudome is for a Japanese player of his era is large.
He's tall, but
large-ish.
He's not.
He was skinny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's pretty big now, though. He's
filled out. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think the swing will be able to generate some power, but Nao is not a big guy, so I don't expect him to be some home run hitter. But look. Kazuyoshi Tatsunami was not a big guy in stature, but he had his share of power.
Well, he's the career doubles leader,
doubles
I think.
Leader. Yeah. That's right. That's right. All right. Obviously the media locks in on some favorites, so it's hard to escape some of the guys, but Masahiro Tanaka's return with the Eagles has been A-list news for the sports channels when they're doing their roles at night. So I like his return. I like him talking to the younger players. I think he spoke to the team before his first practice and had some bullpens, and they've just been locked in on him every move. And but he's also trying to impart some of his wisdom onto the younger players or with the younger players. And It just looks like it's going to be fun. I think the guys on Pro Yaku News this past Monday were talking about the fact. Now, remember, he has a 28 game winning streak, and
we have to call it a regular season winning streak because he lost his last Japan series game.
His last
Japan series start.
Correct. Yes. So, yeah, they're locked in on him, so that'll be a fun watch. And all the things that you and I talked about last time when we did the show, Pro Yaku News brought up, and the fact that they have an embarrassment of riches on the pitching staff, and all these guys are going to be a difficult problem to figure out who's going to start when and how many spot starts some of the other guys are going to get. And remember now, when Masahiro Tanaka was here last time, he's pitched so many innings that it was basically a day off for the bullpen every time he went out there. And they do have some other innings eaters. So maybe the bullpen will get some rest this year and make them more effective, these guys said. So yeah, it's going to be fun. The Eagles definitely have a legitimate chance to unseed the Hawks, at least as the Pacific League representative in the Japan Series, but that's a long way from where we are right now. So
yeah, I heard before we get into the Hawks, I don't know, phobia.
Yeah.
I did see one interesting story the other day in which it talked about Hiroki Kokubo, who is the former Japan national team manager, is the newest sacrificial lamb. I mean, newest head coach of the SoftBank Hawks. I mean, normally the head coach's job is basically there to test the limits of physical and mental abuse. Physical abuse on his underlings and mental abuse from the pressure put on him by the SoftBank Hawks organization.
Right. And to be the first person to shake hands with the manager after each win.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, he's there. And apparently somebody wrote a story about how Kokubo is developing plans to cope with the upstart Rakuten, you know, Masahiro Tanaka led upstart Rakuten Eagles.
Oh, really?
All right. Extra hard practice because the Eagles are going to be a threat this year.
Oh, come on. Extra hard practice. Yeah, that'll do it. One of the other players that the media has locked onto is Teruaki Sato of Hanshin. And I think I messaged you this past week saying one of the news outlets that I watch regularly showed him in the weight room with his shirt off. And he's got muscles popping out of his muscles. I mean, the guy, he looks the part physically for sure, but you have to be able to hit the ball consistently, and they have to figure out a defensive position for him. Is it going to be first base or outfield? It's also going to be depending on the availability status of some of the import players, which we will get to shortly here. And
he can run. Like that. Apparently he's a really good base runner as well.
He's a really good athlete.
Well, that's
good.
You
got to be able to hit the ball, bro.
Yeah, so, indeed.
Contact is going to be the issue.
And I think this is a good sign for the Tigers because the team, which is absolutely probably the worst team in Japan at training their players in terms of getting them to learn how to put on weight and to condition themselves, probably just should abandon that and just get guys who are really strong to begin with and know what they're doing, because the Tigers are absolutely incompetent when it comes to teaching their players how if I was a Tigers fan, I'd sue them for incompetence. You know, it's like you're selling tickets. I mean, look, Shintaro Fujinami is as skinny as he was when he came out of high school. What are you doing? Just give it up. Just stop and just sign people who know what they're doing because they know more than you do.
# hi.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry, Tigers fans. I had to say it.
Okay. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and then take a shower and maybe go to the hospital after Jim beat us up like that. Talk about what I want to call the import passport situation. There are a number of teams that I wouldn't say they're going to be – well, some of them are going to have zero foreign players when the season starts. It's likely that that's the situation. At the moment – I saw a report, Jason Koskri of the Japan Times tweeted it out, but I had seen it in the paper about Nikkan Sports just doing a chart. It had a big chart, a big graphic, with teams had none of its import players scheduled to report to Japan. It was all pending. And on the list of none was DeNA, Seibu, and essentially Nippon Ham, but Nippon Ham has Wang Pojong, so the Taiwanese player. So we'll count him and say there are only two. However, Seibu, now you were telling me that Reed Garrett
is apparently in Japan now, but he's quarantining.
Okay, so that was not reflected in this chart.
No.
But yeah, I did talk to Zach Neal a little while back, and he said he didn't know when he was going to be able to make it over. So I'm getting the idea that some of these guys, even if they are, because if they're not in camp now, they're going to have to get ready. And you can only get ready by playing in some games because they don't, and I guess practicing. That'll be your spring training once you get here. But I don't see guys just coming over, getting off the plane, and then a couple weeks later they're going to be even able to play. I think they're going to have to go through some quarantine process over here and then start getting ready and then get into. I'm thinking they're going to be about a month late, some of these guys.
Yep.
Depending on the team.
Because there's John and I were talking about it, and I've been thinking about it. I didn't realize that the fighters were all out of luck, except for their Taiwan outfielder, Wong Po Jung. But I think it's just because they do things differently administratively. You know, the team has different ways of doing things.
Right.
Essentially, if you have your residence card in your hand, when you get on the plane, you can arrive because you're a Japanese resident. So I'm guessing for one reason or another, I should call the fighters international director, who's a friend, that the fighters players who were offered contracts and they were tendered contracts at the end of the year did not leave the country with their resident permits, and the same for the Lions and the Bay Stars. And just because of the way the teams do their business, and it might also include such details as the way they have to deal with the local immigration office. Mm. It might be completely out of their hands. So I don't want to cast aspersions, although, you know, it's easy to do with some teams. I will refrain.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's going to create this unfair or this imbalance where you have some teams that have, I mean, look at DeNA. They're one of the teams that they've got a number of foreign players registered on this list, at least, and none of these guys is ready to, it just says pending all the way across for all of their foreign players. So that would be an unfair disadvantage for them. But I guess it just depends on how you had run your team. And like the Dragons had Viciedo, he was under contract. They got him ready. They made sure that he was going to be here in time. I think the Carp had a bunch, at least three of their players just come early before everything went down with the lockdown, well, the semi-lockdown, soft lockdown that we have here, and just got their processes going very quickly and got the guys over. And then there were other teams that were just asleep at the wheel, it appears. Or maybe they just didn't know who they were going to sign. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll have to ask. But, that seems to be a developing situation that we'll just have to keep an eye on and see how it plays out, fortunately or unfortunately for some of the people.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know what the deal is, but it would not surprise me if it happens to be that the procedures at the local immigration office might be slightly different from location to location.
That could be it too. All right. A few notes. I know you wanted to start off with the preseason games or the preseason schedule being changed. Now, how did that go?
Not much of a big thing, except that outside of Okinawa, all of the games held in an area where there is a state of emergency will be day games, according to NPB. So they're going to move all those. And there's some discussion about whether they're going to be able to have more than 5,000 fans in the stands. The government has said there's a 5,000 fan hard cap, but NPB, and I think after a year of having strict admission controls, they want to be a little more flexible this year to make up some of that lost revenue. So they're lobbying to have, you know, something
like
that.
Yeah,
they are. Yeah, they are. I'll bet they are too. They were really quiet about it last year. I mean, they really put MLB to shame. You know, this is what we need to do. Okay, we're in line. And now they're kind of going like, come on, guys. Come on, cut us some slack.
Cut us some slack, Jack.
Absolutely.
Well, I couldn't figure out why they were making these games day games instead of night games. And the only thing that I could work out and the only rationale I could think of in my head was because they didn't want fans to come and gather around stadiums at night, maybe try to wait for some autographs or something like that. Because they'd have to work in the daytime, they couldn't do it.
Well, I think the government has asked during the state of emergency for businesses to close by 8 p.m. So I think that's the reason they want to send all the stadium staff home by then.
Okay, well, even more. I mean, because that means that there'll just be more people out there who can go to stadiums. So, yeah, closing day. They can't go to their favorite watering holes. Yeah, they're gonna.
Tom's new podcast will be called "The Baseball Opportunist." Other people can't go, so I want to go.
Wait a second. You think I have more time to do something else?
Well, you know, this one.
Yeah, so, you think I have a second factory or a minute?
I think. Yeah. I mean, given the success, given the windfall accruing to this endeavor.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'll tell you this, buddy. While I'll be in the factory trying to make time, it takes time to make time.
#Hi.
Right on.
Losing proposition. All right. And this past week, one other note that I wanted to get to was that this past week I saw it on the news, so I watched these interviews, but the Giants shortstop, Hayato Sakamoto, and the ace of the team, Tomoyuki Sugano, who was supposed to, or who tried, or maybe stuck his toe in the MLB waters, this offseason to see find out that they were pretty cold and came back to the Giants. They were talking about this past Japan series against the SoftBank Hawks and playing them. And Sakamoto said, yes, their pitchers were really tough. He was praising the pitchers, but it was Sakamoto's interview. I'm sorry, it was Sugano's interview that really struck me that I saw on TV. And he just talked about the fact that he used the same phrasing that I did, first of all. I've been saying for years that whatever SoftBank's doing, it's something different. It's something different from what the other teams are doing. And he used that exact same expression. And then he talked about great minds think alike. and he also talked about the fact that lineup, he talked about getting through it and that, you know, you get some of the bigger names out, and then there are guys who you think you can get out who have improved, and they end up burning you. Or the fact that these guys, I think we talked about it last year, that they are at their best, they're at their peak when the chips are on the table, when the challenge is before them, and that it's really, that's the part that beating them. It's not just the physical stuff. It is the fact that they're ready to go and they're mentally tough. And Sakamoto talked about the fact that guys he had never heard of, pitchers coming out of the bullpen, and they're all throwing really hard and they're all spotting their pitches. And it was just such a challenge. So I thought that was really interesting because they looked like a beaten team when we were in the midst of that series, but they sound like a beaten team still.
I think, yeah, it was interesting because, well, Sakamoto is the captain and he's the big veteran on that team now. And, but he was the one Giants hitter who I thought was routinely getting good swings, you know, who was having the really good at bats. I mean, he didn't get great results, but I thought he swung the bat really well. I thought he was having good at bats. And the other comment I would make about the interviews was Tomoyuki Sugano saying, you know, I got Akira Nakamura and Yuki Inagita out. I think it was Nakamura and Yuki Inagita. I kind of got my share of outs against them. And then Yuris Belgracial and Jody Kurihara killed me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the not just the depth of the lineup, but just the fact that those guys they were probably pretty confident they could get those guys out with it. But the Hawks were just playing at peak performance.
And as I posted on my blog yesterday, something when I saw those two interviews, I just saw the two clips. I thought, the Hawks are really good, but it almost makes it sound the way they're presented, it almost makes it sound like the Giants are thinking, well, if we only got the Hawks, you know, if we got rid of, didn't have to play the Hawks, we'd be okay. But that ain't quite true either, because if you, I looked in my blog post, I think it's called I've Got News for You.
Uh-huh.
If you look at their interleague records of the Pacific League without the Hawks, you take away the best team in Japanese baseball, so they don't have to play them, and then you add a team, you add the Rakuten Eagles, who were the worst team in Japanese baseball for about the first 3 years of their existence.
Yep.
And Pacific League still better. So I got news for you guys. If you didn't have to play the Hawks, you'd probably still lose the Japan series.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah. Well, let's try that though.
Let's try to get rid of
it. Yeah, just for pure, you know, interest.
Yeah, but that's it, you know, it goes. It goes with the theme of let's get the DH will be the answer to our problems, and maybe we can get the Hawks to join the Central League.
Yeah, you keep roll that DH theory up in some paper and smoke it.
Indeed, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, we've got one comment, so let's go to fielding questions. All right, so after that blast that Jim Allen left on the last show, we didn't get anything. No more high heat, no one saying anything, but Glenn, who sent in the question originally that sparked that response from Jim, said, awesome answer, chaps. Love Jim's Iron Curtain / East Berlin vibe. With a tingling sense of suspicion that something is going on with the Giants. You could imagine him outside Tokyo Dome in his hat / coat in the shadows of the mirror room.
I'm afraid when I go to try to get into Tokyo Dome this year, the Giants will stop me at Checkpoint Charlie now.
I think you're okay. Something tells me you're okay, but yeah, the hat. Lose the hat.
That's not nice. I lose the hat. I lose everything.
I thought for certain that little rant would generate much more of a response. But you know what? I'm glad Glenn enjoyed it. And I guess everybody else is just asleep at the wheel. Wake up.
Well, it went on for a while. So if they weren't asleep at the start, they probably were at the end.
I don't know, but this is the end of this show. So again, if you guys have a moment, do us a favor, go to iTunes, rate and review the show so we can, like I said, get more respect in the podcast world. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag high heats and questions via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com, or you can go to the Facebook and leave us a comment there. We will see you next time, whenever that is. We will try to get together some guys for the preview shows. I'm so tired. I'm still tired from last year. I don't know if I have the energy to do that again. But hopefully those guys will reach out to me and say, hey, we're ready to come on, and it'll be easier this year. So we look forward to doing that for you. We will talk to you next time. Enjoy your spring season.
Okay, and see you on jballallen.com. We've got a lot of things coming up. And if you're not a subscriber and you want to join our live chats, well, now's the time. See ya!
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag high heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.